The Guardian.
Welcome back to the weekly round of Critical Mauling, otherwise known as the Guardian Film Show. Woe betide the swaggering Oscar contender that blunders into this den. It's liable to be clawed, bitten, slobbered over, and possibly urinated on. Metaphorically speaking, of course. Rising up, back on the streets, director Ryan Coogler mines the myth of Rocky Balboa with the appropriately punchy and sentimental boxing saga Creed.
Do you remember how Alice wasn't always in Wonderland? Well, I wasn't always in Room.
And Brie Larson and Jacob Tremblay are sent clambering towards the light in the acclaimed adaptation of Emma Donoghue's Room. First up, we have the revenant tale of foul deeds in the frozen West. Leonardo DiCaprio plays a man written off and left for dead who will nonetheless stop at nothing to get his hands on that Oscar. Here's director Alejandro González Iñárritu talking to Henry Barnes.
I think this film is very resonant for today's world, you know. I think there's a lot of things that in that film portray that basically are still happening in our world. I mean, the interaction and with nature and the way we are basically using nature to only profit without consider animals or habitats and extracting every element and cutting trees and impacting every community without consider the repercussions of it and creating so much pain that was implanted in that time. It's like, you know, the regulate capitalism planted seed in that time.
There were reports from the set that making this film was a living hell for some people. How true were those reports, and does it matter?
You know, every experience is a subjective experience. You know, anybody could have lived the hell, and for others were the most exciting experience ever lived in his life. I will say that personally, I think that it was extremely difficult and challenging. We struggle every bit of it. We fight back every one of the problems, and we succeed most likely every time. But the cost was really high.
Joined on the couch by Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Shord. Peter, it's a film that sets itself up as an endurance test. Did this test your endurance?
Not in that bad way, no. Basically, this is why I go to the cinema, this kind of film. It's just so thrilling. Sensual immersion in a world that you can understand, but which is nonetheless simultaneously desperately strange and alienating and exciting. I just found it an incredibly exciting film, and strange and nerve-peeling and sense-peeling. I thought it was wonderful, wonderful film.
It's a real twist on Birdman, which is Iñárritu's last film,
yeah.
And yet there are similarities there too.
That sense of a kind of sinuous, looping, open-ended, kind of meandering camera movement narrative style, which is the same as Birdman, interestingly, although to completely different ends, that I find incredibly impressive way that he keeps absolute unitary control over the story while appearing just to let it ride like a river, let it wander where it will. I can't praise it enough. I'm just thinking, here is why I do this job. Here's why I want to go to the movies, is for this kind of film. I think it's fantastic.
Peter's saying it kind of deliberately lets itself meander and wander like a river. I actually found it very prescriptive in terms of what it was doing. I mean, in a good way and a bad way. It felt very, very controlled.
I think to be able to
be on top of that kind of meandering. You have to have incredible exacting control over it. However, I'm with Peter on this, and I hated what he did with Birdman.
I thought it was
incredibly annoying. But, you know, where one felt that the stylistic element of Birdman was sort of self-indulgent and self-serving, here it just feels absolutely organic to me. And the effects are so good. Mm. I mean, the bear attack in this, I don't know how they did it.
No.
I mean, that is amazing. And if you're sort of showing something that could happen, it is so much more impressive. I mean, for me, this is, the award season is done with this film. It's done. This should win. It will win.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I know
but
what you
it,
mean.
Does it have the human element, though? Isn't, it felt at times like I was kind of visiting Yosemite or something, where you kind of, it's a thing of natural wonder that you're gawping at, you're dumbfounded,
yes.
and you're thinking, but the people, where are they?
I think the people are there. The people are dwarfed and intimidated by the majestic landscape in a way that they're supposed to be, in a way that you're supposed to be as well as the audience. I didn't have a problem with that. Usually I get restive with this incessant desire for revenge in the movies. Revenge is the driving force in every film we ever see. Revenge, which is actually relatively very rare in real life, is everywhere in the movies. And usually I'm happy with it. But not
You've
here.
Never taken your revenge
no,
on anyone?
No, I don't think I have. I don't think so. I honestly don't think I have.
You've got a list as long as your arm.
No, my dear fellow. No, not at all. But I found this just compelling. I felt that, you know, in a way, we are the human interest in this story because we are drawn into it as well. Just wonderful stuff. Wonderful.
Tell me about DiCaprio. He's certainly gone the extra mile for the awards, hasn't he?
I guess. I mean, I think I know what you mean about the human element, and it's not what stays with you. And I don't sort of think of his face when I think of this film. I thought DiCaprio in this was amazing, and I think he should and will win the Oscar. It's not a performance that stays with me at all. You know, just the images of it stay with you. But it is like, it does haunt you in a way that no other film this year is haunting me.
I think DiCaprio is very good, but it's not about the performance as such. He's good in it. He's very good indeed, but that's not the point of this. The point is the complete landmass of the film, in a way.
Braving bows and arrows, bear and snow. That's Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant. We now move from one founding American myth to another. It's the tale of an underdog boxer and his grizzled old trainer. It's Creed.
So what made you want to fight?
My pop was a fighter. Died before I was born. Bounced around foster care, in and out of juvie. I've been fighting my whole life. It's not a choice for me.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent.
Who's next?
Michael B. Jordan is Adonis Creed, the bastard son of a heavyweight champion, rattling around Philly's blue-collar district with his eye on the prize. And Sylvester Stallone is Rocky Balboa, the beloved retired pug facing a battle of his own.
Just like any other fight. So if I fight, you fight.
Peter, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the nostalgic rush
of
Star Wars. And yet from the same era, let's not forget the nostalgic rush of the Rocky movies.
Yeah, I wish that Ryan Coogler could have been set up to do this movie maybe 2 or 3 years ago before Sly Stallone had been tempted into yet another dopey Rocky sequel, or even the horror that was Grudge Match, if you remember that, which was not a Rocky movie, but a quasi-Rocky movie, along with, I'm sorry to say, Robert De Niro.
Movie.
Yeah, exactly. I've got to say, I don't think it transforms the boxing genre in a way that Raging Bull transforms it. Although, interestingly, I think there are allusions to Raging Bull towards the end of the movie. But, yeah, I liked it. I liked the peace process with the past thing that the movie sets up.
I enjoyed it, actually. And again, the nostalgia did a lot of the heavy lifting for me.
It did.
I mean, the steps up to the Arts Museum in Philadelphia, that's like the Millennium Falcon for me, I think.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I thought it was interesting the way it didn't overplay that.
They restrict the use of the theme. You keep thinking you're going to hear that Rocky theme.
I thought, when is it going to come? And it does come, but it's interestingly kind of
restrained, it's not overdone. And actually, I like Sylvester Stallone. I think
he's very good.
He's a good actor. Yeah. I mean, he's a good actor in a restricted range, but he's relaxed, he's charming, he has real address to the camera. Mm. He's good. He's a very good actor.
Well, it made me remember the whole line about Rocky was that it was one of those films that killed the knotty, interesting American movies of the 70s, that Rocky came along and blew it all out of the water. And you think, no, Rocky was that as well.
It was.
It was just Rocky was the one that got lucky.
It was.
And his performance in that was good.
But I have to say, I like it thus far and no further, really. I think it's, you know, it's great fun. But I'm still not convinced that it really takes you the extra mile into something absolutely superb.
And yet you've said before that Raging Bull is
Raging Bull did that because
film.
it is because it absolutely subverted the boxing movie and took it somewhere else and took it outside the ring as well as inside the ring. Whereas I'm sitting there and thinking, is there another boxing movie to be made now? Is there one that isn't about an underdog battler battling his own demons? I mean, surely there's something
else.
But
this is one of the great stories,
yeah,
though, isn't
I guess
it?
So.
You can't tinker with that formula too much.
Yeah, I guess so. It's, I mean, sure. It's not really for me, but I like Creed. I think it's got a big heart. It's humorous. It's intelligent. Coogler's a smart director. He directs it with such an easy swing. It's one of those movies that looks easy because he makes it look easy. And I think it's good stuff.
Ribs broken, nose broken, eyes swollen shut.
What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of taking on a name and losing. Call me a fraud.
You're still caught in the shadow.
Every move that I make, every punch that I throw, everything's gonna be compared to him.
You are Apollo Creed's son, so use the name. It's yours.
Crude, sentimental, and borderline irresistible. That's Creed. And for our third and final Oscar contender, we turn our attention to a tale of parenthood, imprisonment, and the childhood experience. Here's Henry Barnes talking to Lenny Abramson and Emma Donoghue, the director and writer of Room.
Jack, listen to me. Do you remember how Alice wasn't always in Wonderland? Well, I wasn't always in Room. I've been locked in here for 7 years. There's a world on the other side of this wall.
What other side?
I did a lot of research into different situations, not just kidnappings, because there have been so few of those kidnappings that include a child born into the situation. I mean, hardly any. The average psychopath does not want the sheer hassle of a child. So I looked at a lot of other situations too, and one of the ones I looked at was solitary confinement in American jails, which is, it's like this mass social experiment. So many people have been through it.
I wasn't always in Room. I'm like Alice. I was a little girl named Joy.
Nah.
And I lived in a house with my mom and my dad. You would call them Grandma and Grandpa.
What house?
A house. It was in the world. And there was a backyard, and we had a hammock. And we would swing in the hammock, and we would eat ice cream.
A TV house?
No, Jack, a real house, not TV. Are you even listening to me? When I was a little older, when I was 17, I was walking home from school.
Where was I?
You were still up in heaven. But there was a guy, he pretended that his dog was sick.
What guy?
Old Nick. We call him Old Nick. I don't know what his real name is. But he pretended his dog was sick.
What's the dog's name?
Jack, there wasn't a dog. He was trying to trick me, okay? There wasn't a dog. Old Nick stole me.
I want a different story.
No, this is the story that you get.
Kids have to kind of, they have no choice but to try as hard as they can to come to terms with the sort of unknowable things in their worlds. I mean, their worlds are so dimly illuminated in terms of the big questions. What they're vivid in the detail, but they have no way of processing the darker things that they can sense, and yet their attempts to do it, and their optimism, even when as an adult you can see how bad things are. I find that incredibly moving.
This is our chance. You're gonna play dead? No, Nick's gonna come and take you outside. And I'm gonna be there in your head talking to you the whole time.
I'm scared.
I know.
The poster doesn't show any real shots of the room.
Yeah.
There's a very much a sense of freedom and a sense of love, which I understand those issues are tied into it. But I guess what I'm asking is this a hard sell for a broader audience?
Yes. That's why the trailer and the poster are the way that they are. Mm. And what got me behind the approach to the marketing materials is the recognition that no matter how much people say, look, it's not what you expect, it's not a sort of an incarceration drama. It's not a, it's not miserable. It's it all of those things. What you will see constantly written by lazy headline writers, or you know, is captivity drama, or after years of constant abuse, you know, and you go, well, actually, that's just going to put off a huge swathe of the audience that would actually get a tremendous amount out of this film.
Jack? Someone here would like to meet you.
Oh, Jack. Here, let me get this for you. Come on, let's go see.
Jack? Meet Seamus. Would you like to pet him?
Catherine, I thought this one was absolutely tremendous.
Why did you think that, Sam?
I thought it was just perfectly handled. I think it's a film of real beauty that comes out of this absolute kind of black horror without cheapening it, without taking easy shortcuts, superbly acted, superb control of the material. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I agree. I thought I was sort of slightly ambiguous about it going in and then massively taken with it. I don't think it's quite the match for The Revenant, but I think it's a very, very, very good film. As you say, the acting is amazing. Jacob Tremblay is really the heart of this film.
Yeah.
He was 8, I think, when they shot it, and he's just extraordinary. I mean, if he knows what he's doing, then he's the best actor of all time. I had some issues in terms of sort of plot problems,
yeah.
Why she doesn't endlessly try the keypad to try and get them out.
Yes, I was always thinking about things like that. Or put something underneath the keypad to get the imprint on it or something.
There's only 4 numbers she could go through. Also, they could build
You'd have been out in a week,
I know. They could have built up the thing and gone up the sky. You know, they don't seem to have tried that.
Victim blaming. To be a pedant, I think with a keypad thing, there are, as I understand it, 9,999 different permutations. Those sort of things lock up as a security consideration after you've tried it wrongly for 3 or 4.
Mm. You've been there.
Trust me, I know.
You're worrying about knowledge.
No, well, any PIN number will do that. So I think that isn't my... I don't want to get into it, but those aren't my plot issues. But I think the whole of the third act is managed so subtly and so unpredictably and unguessably that I thought it was very, very good indeed. It's based, of course, on the 2 great Austrian cases. And this, in a way, is the kind of Austrian hardcore language translated into Hollywood indie, in a
yes.
way. I mean, I know that there are Austrian directors who have addressed this issue, Markus Schleinzer in his Michael, and possibly Ulrich Seidel as well, with touches here and there. And those are very, very different directors who treat it with absolute despairing severity.
An unremitting quality.
Unremitting horror. Now, that is arguably truer in spirit to what we're talking about, but there's no way that this film is evasive or emollient in any way. Mm. This is very cold and clear and in its own way true to what we're talking about. What a world it plunges you into.
But the world it plunges you into is the childhood world, isn't it?
Mm.
And the conceit is almost that a child can spin horror into something different.
Mm. Yeah, well, there's a key line in it later on where somebody says he's still plastic. It's about that plastic age, isn't it?
Mm.
And that is really, really interesting. But as you say, it is a sort of strangely positive spin on this sort of Austrian.
Well, it's kind
setup.
Of alchemy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is wonderful. It is sort of endlessly fascinating. I do think there are elements of it that sort of, there's a very crucial dog, or there's 2 very crucial dogs, in fact, but the second very crucial dog, I don't know, I feel sort of slightly unhappy with myself for having been so moved by the second crucial dog.
Mm.
I sort of feel like if I watched it again, I might find elements of it a bit over-exploitative, and there is a plausibility issue for me right at the heart of the film. It's not about the keypad, but right in the heart of the chronology of the film that I think I would feel very exploited by on a second watch.
I think one thing that I do have to say is that one thing that's brilliant about it is it just says children accept everything. Here's this 5-year-old, and just without being feeling sad or scared, they just accept everything. And the film that I found myself thinking of was The Truman Show, really.
Yes,
it was
of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thinking, this is my world, I accept it.
Yeah. Because what else is there?
What else is there to compare it to? Yeah, exactly. And there's something rather terrifying and brilliant, if this sounds too pretentious, an existential sense about Room. And that's part of what I found so absorbing about it.
TV persons are flat and made of colors. But me and you are real. Ma, why do aliens never scream back?
I guess they still can't hear us.
But old Nick, I don't know if he's real. Maybe half.
Vote, vote, vote for Lenny Abrahamson's Room. And that's it from us. We've bounced from corner to corner, from outside to inside. My thanks to Peter and to Catherine. We're back with another film show, more critical mauling, same time next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.